Good evening, everybody. It is such an honor and pleasure to be here for the first time making a visit to St. Michael's in Thuringia. I bring my greetings and the greetings of all of the people in the Episcopal Church in Europe, of which you are a part. We are delighted that you are here, and I am glad finally to have a chance to come and make a proper visit to a congregation I am proud to call one of ours. If I may, I want to focus on the psalm that we sang together. This is a sermon called Faith in a Fear-Shaped World. And that very first verse of the psalm is the one I want to hang my thinking and praying on with you. I'm going to start by telling you a story about a man it was my privilege to know a little bit, not somebody you will likely ever have heard of before. His name was Stephen Jay Gould, and in his day he was quite well known. His place was the United States. He died in 2002, but he was a paleontologist and a historian of science. He wrote a lot of essays, and he made science accessible to a lot of people. He explained big, complex ideas. He was also a person who shaped our understanding about how evolution works. And one of his big ideas was that evolution was not just a smooth slope of change in species, but rather had this idea of his called punctuated equilibrium. Things stayed the same for a long period of time and then suddenly changed, probably because of changes in the climate or in the environment around us. Professor Gould taught paleontology at Harvard. And in those days, he formed a class with two of his friends, Harvey Cox from the Divinity School and Alan Dershowitz from the Law School. And it was a class called Thinking About Thinking. It was a class for undergraduates in which these three people from three very different fields of the university came together and shared with each other different modes of inquiry, different ways of thinking through a problem there in front of a room full of undergraduates. And very soon it became a class that filled the largest lecture hall in the university every time it was offered. I'm telling you all of this about Stephen Gould because I want to explain an irony behind one of his biggest ideas. Professor Gould always described himself as an agnostic. He said of himself that he was a skeptic, but he felt the only honorable position for somebody of a scientific mind was to say that they were an agnostic, because there were questions that religion addressed that science simply could not. That got him a lot of critique from his scientific colleagues. But it also led to one of his most lasting ideas, an idea he published in a 1999 book called Rocks of Ages. His idea was that the so-called conflict between religion and science was based on a false premise. The claim that each possessed tools for analyzing the ideas and the processes of the other. Instead, Professor Gould wrote, religion and science were, here's his phrase, non-overlapping magisterium. What he meant by a magisterium was a domain where one form of teaching holds the appropriate tools for meaningful discourse and resolution. So, he said, the magisterium of science is the empirical realm, what the universe is made of, and why does it work that way? The magisterium of religion extends over questions of ultimate meaning and moral value. These two do not overlap, he wrote, nor do they encompass all inquiry. Now, we might immediately say, we don't agree with that entirely, Professor Gould, because we think there are, in fact, places where these things do overlap. Medical ethics, for example. But here's the irony in the story of Stephen Gould. He wasn't just a scientist and an agnostic. He loved to sing. And especially, he loved to sing in groups. In fact, this incredibly accomplished scientist and scholar, known all over the world. If you Google him on YouTube, you'll find hundreds of interviews of Professor Stephen Jay Gould. He always made time to sing in a community chorale called the Boston Cecilia. And he couldn't always participate. He was a busy guy. He gave lectures everywhere. But there was one piece in the repertoire that no matter what else he had on his agenda, everything got canceled for him to sing in this piece. It was Franz Joseph Haydn's great oratorio, The Creation. That oratorio tells the Genesis story of the 7 days of creation, day by day by day. And if you know that piece at all, and I'll bet Laurie does, and I'll bet Scott does, because you've already heard a little bit of it tonight, you know that right at the midpoint of this great oratorio, on the fourth day, when the lights have been put in the sky of heaven, the sun and the moon, comes this most glorious composition for voice, drawing on that psalm. Do you remember what it is? The heavens are telling the glory of God. Right in the middle. I love the irony of this great scientist standing on the risers of a choir, belting out that psalm. It gives me this sense of Stephen Gould's ever-present curiosity about what brought all of this into being. I've taken you along the way of this story to make an epiphany point. Because whatever else these long, miserable months of the pandemic have taught us, whatever else they have meant for our societies, at least this much is true. These have been months and now years where science has been far more present in the lives of most people than at any previous time in our lives. The science of epidemiology has helped us understand how this virus has spread. Medicine has found new ways of treating COVID patients, and geneticists have been at the forefront of helping us to find new vaccines to help us and to keep us safe. And in the midst of all of this, some people are asking new questions at the intersection of science and faith, or maybe more accurately, old questions using new phrases. How could a merciful God permit such suffering and devastation to affect so many people? Why would a God we proclaim as almighty not exercise some of that power to protect us? And at the very same moment, new questions have emerged about the very science that has become so much a part of our daily awareness. Is this virus just a terrible hoax? There are some people who think so. Are the vaccines to be trusted? There are voices of suspicion claiming that Bill Gates or George Soros or some other nefarious actor is planting things in us through these vaccines. Does wearing face masks and having to show proof we've been vaccinated really do anything to save lives or stop the spread of the virus? There are thousands of people in the streets of our cities who don't believe we should have to do these things. It's not just that the pandemic has caused some people to question their faith in God. It is that the pandemic has caused some people to question their faith in science. What this time of trouble has revealed most clearly about all of us is that faith is hard. And holding on to it, keeping it at the still center of our souls, demands something of us when our usual way of life and our sense of safety is thrown into disorder by whatever makes that happen. So in this season of manifestation, this season where the practice of the church for years has been to bring back before us all of the ways in which Jesus becomes manifested to the world as the fulfillment of God's promise and confronts more and more people with the necessity of having to choose what to believe, here's the question for you. How's your faith? What do you have faith in? What do you most deeply believe in? Has your faith, or maybe your capacity for faith, has it been damaged in these terrible years? When you come right down to it, most of what we believe in is ourselves. Our capacities, our abilities, our competencies, our knowledge, our opinions. Most of what life hands us, we have confidence we can handle. What we believe in, what we depend on, is ourselves. But of course, that isn't really faith. In that kind of life, faith is something more like a fashion accessory. There are things it goes with and things it doesn't go with. Where faith comes in is the point at which our capacities, our knowledge, our abilities, our resources, our talents, all of that hit their limit. And ultimately, of course, our mortality is a limit. We find out then what we really have faith in when we are suddenly thrown out of the world that we think we can control. When we suddenly have to confront our dependence on something beyond ourselves. You all are just about the newest mission of our convocation. We are immensely proud of you. We delight in seeing your growth and your excitement as you build this community. In fact, here it comes. We have faith in you. We have faith in you because we have no other presence here. We have no other voices to speak God's hope into this place where God's people are. We know that God is working through you to bring something new into being. And we simply have faith that somehow, through you, that's going to happen. Because it's not something that we can control or determine. We have faith in you. And so the Epiphany question is, as you are manifesting Christ's hope in this place, what do you really have faith in? People everywhere have responded in so many different ways to the challenge these years of pandemic have set before our sense of ourselves. Some people have been angry. Some people have been suspicious. Some people have been despairing. But for us, for people of the Christian faith, this is a moment of recalling just what our faith is supposed to be about. It's a time to remember that God's magisterium encompasses the whole of our being, not just as individuals, but as societies and the cultures that we create. And it is for us now to find ways of sharing with the world around us the outrageous hope that faith has to offer in a world that feels tempted to spiritual despair and social indifference. So let us be that light in this world. Let us reclaim the gift of that faith given to us in our baptism that surpasses and sustains us through the chances and changes of this world. And let us share with joy the hope of that faith with those who come seeking and questioning and doubting, because God knows we all do all of those things too. Amen.